good evening, everyone. This is James Renford Powell, and this is the Searchers Roadmap Show. We've been bringing you shows for more than 2 years in this arena, that of religious leaders, teachers, spiritualists, thinkers, and obviously these are very good shows. We've had a lot of people go to it. In fact, we have about 6 times as many people go to listen to the shows in the archives as are listening live. Tonight, our guest is Don Ware. He's a former lieutenant colonel, retired Air Force, and we've got a wide range of subjects to talk to him about, including the Urantia book, the UFO phenomena, and other matters that I think will be of interest to you. Generally speaking, I think on these shows you're hearing things, talking to people, listening to people that you probably are just not going to get on most shows. So we're glad today to have Don Ware with us. Let me remind you before we get started that you can call in at any time on 347-838-9142. If you have friends who do not have a computer or who are not online, they can call at 347-838-9142. There are 50 lines. If you would like to ask a question, just be sure that when you call in on that number, 347-838-9142, you press the 1 button on your touch-tone dial, and that will flag Mr. Cecil McDaniel, our moderator, and he will be talking to people in the chat room, and he will take your calls, and your calls will take precedence over the conversation and the questions that are going on at the time of the call. So feel free to make that call. If for any reason you missed part of the show or you would like to review it, you can go to www.blogtalkradio.com. That's B-L-O-G-T-A-L-K, blogtalkradio.com/Renford, R-E-N-F-O-R-D. And that will take you into the RBR network, Radio by Renford. And then you can go in and over on the left side of the homepage and scroll down, and you'll find the shows, and you'll be able to pick up this show later this evening or in the morning. You'll be able to listen to this show again and any time that you would like to. That's at blogtalkradio.com/Renford. And the number again is 347-838-9142. Now let's get on and talk to, we're going to be talking, there's a number of subjects that we could talk to Mr. Don Ware about. He's very knowledgeable on a number of different fronts, but let me tell you a little bit about him. He is a lieutenant colonel, retired in the United States Air Force. He actually began this type of study in around maybe a different way than most. While he was in service, in July of 26, 1952, he witnessed 7 alien craft or vehicles over Washington, D.C., and this began his own private research, and I assume that's while he was still in the service. He has his bachelor's degree in mechanical engineering from Duke University in 1957, and his master's in nuclear engineering from the Air Force Institute of Technology in 1972. He's now retired. He spends a lot of time in continuing of that research, and that's where we met at the Ozark UFO Conference this past year. He is also a student of the Urantia book. Now, I recognize that there are not many people who have read that book. There's even, there's few who even know what the word means and has ever seen the book. But it is a phenomenal type of book with a tremendous amount of information in it, and we'll be talking about that tonight. I'd like to thank you for being with us tonight, on the show, Don.
It's my pleasure.
We'll talk about the UFOs a little bit. That was a bit of information that I didn't know. You were witness to seven of these.
Let me add one item here on my bio. Actually, I was only 16 when I saw those in 1952. When I was 17, I went to Duke University and joined the Air Force ROTC program. When I was 18, I had a paranormal experience that I think was very meaningful for the rest of my life. I was in a philosophical discussion with my fraternity brothers, Lambda Chi, till midnight, went to bed, woke up at 2 o'clock with all this information in my mind. I felt like I had to get up and write down. And I did. And what it said basically is I only have one ambition, and that's to be the happiest man in the world. And what it takes to make me happy is a little more than my share of three things: love, excitement, and self-satisfaction, or the feeling that I'm doing something worthwhile. In hindsight, I recognize I was at a decision point in my life as to whether I would commit to the U.S. Air Force. And that, you know, I wrote a long paragraph defining in great detail each of these three things: love, excitement, self-satisfaction. And that experience caused me to realize there was ample opportunity to find those three things as an officer in the Air Force, especially as a fighter pilot. That decision is what allowed me to retire at age 47 with 100% of my time to do whatever I wanted to do and enough money to do it. I think I had guidance from above, probably from my seraphim or spirit guide or whatever you want to call it. It's just been getting better ever since.
So at that time, were you a member of a particular Christian denomination?
Well, my grandfather was a Methodist minister, so I was raised in the Methodist Church. The chapel at Duke University is an interdimensional chapel.
Yeah.
Did
that witnessing the vehicles, did that cause you any consternation or any problems with your faith?
No, not at all. It was actually 2 years before I'd researched enough to convince myself that those were alien vehicles. You know, they were red light type UFOs when I first saw them. But I read everything I could find about the subject in the Duke Library, and there's over a million books there. And I read everything I could find on the subject in UFO and Air Force libraries all over the world. And the Air Force libraries are full of really good books on UFOs. Although they don't like to talk about them officially, they'll put the books in their libraries. In fact, when Colonel Corso wrote the book the day after Roswell, Kirtland Air Force Base initial order for their Air Force Exchange on base store was 500 copies of that book. The Air Force wanted the Air Force people to read all about, the crash of the flying saucer in Roswell and how the U.S. Army R&D folks were able to get advanced technologies from that crash, from the debris from that crash, into the public domain without people knowing where it came from.
So they didn't have a problem with Air Force personnel, but they just didn't want to make it a public confirmation.
That's right. You know, there was this thing called Project Blue Book, where the Air Force, the government, wanted people to report to the government their UFO sightings. And so they set up Project Blue Book as a place to report to. And that went on from, about 18 years or so. But it was becoming more of an embarrassment than a benefit. And so the government used the Condon Report to get the Air Force out of the business and turn it over, the reporting from the public, to the Air Force, to the reporting center in Seattle, Washington, that Bob Gribble started and is now being continued.
And now it's MUFON, right?
No, it's not. It's an independent, it's National UFO Reporting Center.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, all the police around the country were told to direct people there instead of the Air Force. But what really happened is the Air Force was not the organization that was researching UFOs, UFO sightings for the government. It was the U.S. Navy. Because the alien bases were in Navy territory there on the bottom of the oceans.
Mm.
And so the Air Force could say, yeah, we don't know anything about this. Without lying. Because all the good cases were, you know, the things that could be explained away as Venus and a few other things, they let the Air Force research, investigate, but all the good cases went to the Navy.
So these were underwater. This was the most of these sightings were really coming from bases under the water?
An awful lot of them. There were two books written a long time ago based on the records of ship captains. I forget the title of them right now, but they're written by a fellow up in New Jersey. And there were an awful lot of good UFO reports reported in the captain's ship logs, which are known to be fairly accurate. It was quite, kind of interesting.
Well, did your research of the UFO phenomena, did that lead you to researching, and did that lead you into finding the Urantia book?
Kind of in a way it did. But here's what happened. When I retired and had more time to read other things, I set out to do a pretty good literature search on all the persistent mysteries of mankind. I started with telepathy, because that's the way aliens communicate with each other and with humans, direct projection of thought. And then I realized through my UFO studies that there is a hybridization program going on. They're taking eggs from the ladies and sperm from the men, and they're genetically engineering certain characteristics and reimplanting the eggs, and you get an upgraded human. Basically, they're giving us a larger hard drive, a faster chip, and an USB port for telepathy, something we need as we as a society join their society, you know, allowed to leave the planet and join
What do you reckon the size of that operation is?
Say again?
What do you reckon the size of that operation is, the numbers that are being
I think there's an underground and undersea system of bases that where these people, some of them look enough like us to where the human mothers are allowed to raise them, and we write books about them. We call them indigo children, rainbow children, crystal children, etc. But those that don't look enough like us to where their neighbors will accept them have to live separate from us, and they can live underground on this planet. We have used these advanced technologies we got from aliens to put bases on the moon and Mars, and a lot of them live there, waiting for the consciousness of the rest of us on the surface of this planet to be raised to where we can accept people that look quite differently and are much superior in their mental capacity. It's kind of like...
Is there any other governments involved in this, or is this just the U.S.
government? Oh, no, it's a worldwide thing. You know, what I call the fourth grade classroom for the soul is managed at the world level. The third grade classroom for the soul is managed at the national level. And the curriculum is different. In the third grade, your curriculum is what it has been throughout human history. To use free will to make choices that polarize the soul towards service to others, a service to self. But the main curriculum in the fourth grade is to learn to express unconditional love of others. And it is a joint human-angelic-alien project to transform planet Earth from a third grade classroom for the soul to a fourth grade classroom for the soul. Now, once I finished studying these two subjects, I went on and I studied out-of-body experiences, near-death experiences, spiritual healing. World government became a very mysterious subject. You know, talked about it, these six Truth Seeker conferences I was going to every year since 1983. And so I studied world government, and I got invited to two of their meetings, which is quite interesting. And, you know, because I didn't take an adversarial view toward them, so I learned more than people who do take an adversarial view toward the government. Just now, I know some people who are UFO investigators who are very angry at government because they know our national government knows things that they want to know and they won't tell us.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you just need to, if you want to understand what goes on in one level of consciousness, you need to try to look at it from a higher perspective. And that's what I did and encourage other people to do. So I set out and I studied all of the classics acquired in the English language from unseen sources, revelations. And I actually bought the Rancher book at a UFO conference in Eureka Springs, Arkansas in 1989. You know, the table of contents is 35 pages.
Mm-hmm.
It's because it lists all the chapters in each of the 196 papers. And I used that as a reference book in my UFO studies as I went on up through the chain there for 10 years working for MUFON as state section director and state director and eastern regional director, overseeing the investigative activities in 18 eastern states. And
book has 2,097 pages. And
right.
And you don't... what do you reckon the number of people who, I mean, this is not something that, I mean, it's not hidden, but at the same time, it's not broadcast either.
Well, you know, there are probably something over 700,000 in the hands of people right now around the world. They, just this past year, they added the book in four more languages. I think it's they're probably up to 15 or 16 languages now you can buy the book in. Polish and Portuguese, I think, were a couple of the languages they added last year. You know, the Spanish language book was the number one seller in Mexico when it came out. Of all books, mm-hmm. It was the number one seller in Mexico for that year, I think.
There's a lot of keen interest in UFOs and things down there. They seem to be a lot more open about it, government-wise, too.
Well, I think they are more spiritually oriented than a lot of people in America. A lot of people in America have drifted away from a lot of spirituality or at least some religion, and they don't have the close connection with the advanced technologies that America does. And for those two reasons, I think UFOs have been a little more open in their appearance. And they've been approached a little differently without the fear that some people have approached them with here.
So while you were in the Air Force, you were already beginning these studies, but it wasn't until you got out of until you retired that you actually got into a study of the book?
Well, I was reading primarily just UFO books and spiritually oriented books while I was in the Air Force.
Mm.
When I retired, then I expanded into these other subjects. And the classics that I read along the way, you know, besides my literature search in these subjects I mentioned, were The Keys of Enoch, and the Course of Miracles, the raw material, which is originally called the Law of One, four books of the Law of One, which is just transcripts of 104 Q&A sessions. And
are these books all available online?
These are all available. In fact, there are probably more people who learn about the Rancher book online than by getting a hold of the book. They're wonderful websites. Your audience might get a pencil and just write, and let me spell the word Urantia for them first.
Okay.
U-R-A-N-T-I-A. Six letters, just like it sounds when we pronounce it, Urantia.
And
that is their word for this planet. So it's
Urantia
really the book.
Is the alien word, or the spiritual word.
That's what people off of this planet refer to planet Earth as. So the Urantia book is the book of Earth.
Okay.
And for us to carry on this conversation, let me define a few things.
Okay.
We'll have a group of people that are in various positions in the spiritual hierarchy above the level of planet Earth, above the human level. We'll call them the revelators. They are the ones that reveal information to humans, you know, we are somewhat unlike on this planet, like most of the other planets, because we did suffer the disconnection of the communication circuits off the planet as a result of the Lucifer Rebellion. So we could not spread the bad teachings we got from Lucifer, who 200,000 years ago was head of the local star system. Satan was his deputy. Now, the Bible confuses those two, but they were working together, and they both rebelled, and they both were fired from their jobs at that time, but they were still wandering around, allowed to influence those lesser folks like humans to make selfish choices. And
were they physical entities or different dimensional?
Well, they probably didn't have a physical body like humans have. They were created in paradise to manage star systems. In fact, the first 300 pages of the Urantia book, the first 100 pages describes the Trinity. The most common names, I think, are the Universal Father, the Eternal Son, and the Infinite Spirit. You know, like the Bible talks about the Father, Son, and the Holy Ghost.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes 100 pages to do that because there are 22 different names for each aspect of the Trinity, and they're all job descriptions. And then it goes on to describe all these other beings that are created in paradise to manage the various structures of the grand universe that has so many planets with intelligent life. Actually, it has 7 trillion planets with intelligent life. That's a number that most people can't get their mind around, even if you're talking about dollars of the national debt. So, it's really tough to fully understand this, but I encourage everybody that chooses to be a truth seeker to have a large mental whole basket. You know, if you get some information.
What is the main difference between the Law of One books and the Urantia book?
There isn't any big difference. As I went up and I read all these other classics that described our universe, you know, the Law of One, or the Ra material, was when Ra, the same person who influenced the Egyptian civilization thousands of years ago, agreed to Don Elkins, an Eastern Airlines pilot, who had his first UFO sighting when he was in pilot training in 1946, but allowed him to ask any question concerning the reality of the universe or human history as long as it didn't affect living persons. And I think during those 3 years or so between 82 and 84, Don Elkins asked a lot of really good questions, and the answers were very interesting. But my universe was much larger than most people's because I'd read all these other classic revelations, including I'd read all the religious books. I read carefully from cover to cover the Bible, the Quran, the Book of Mormon, the Bhagavad Gita, etc. But my reality fit within the larger reality of the Urantia book when I read that.
So you related to it. It wasn't like a confusing tremendous number of facts that made you wonder what in the world they were talking about.
Well, I must admit I can't say I understood more than 10 or 20% of those first 300 pages. Because what goes on in paradise and Havona, or what they might call heaven, is so far removed from the human experience, it's really hard to get your mind around.
Yeah, that's,
but I had a lot of it
part
in
of
my
it
mental
is
whole
really, is really something else, isn't it? It takes a little contemplative time to go with it, to go
yeah,
with the reading.
You know, I felt that I should carry Urantia books in the trunk of my car, because I go to all these truth seeker meetings and people seem to be guided to me to get the Urantia book. I've sold over 100 of them out of the trunk of my car.
Mm-hmm.
I buy them from the Urantia Foundation. From the Urantia Fellowship, because that book has the index in the back, and I sell them for what it costs, which includes the postage, which is $13. And this book, I think, is the best, most useful book that's ever been published. And when you get that $13, it's a good deal.
You mentioned the name Elkins a while ago. Is that the gentleman that was asking the questions of the
yes,
the lady
that's him.
In
Carla
in
Ruckert
the
was the full trans channel for the raw material, but Don Elkins
for the raw
was
materials. Yeah, and I've seen pictures of her, and I guess that was pictures of him as well. There, what
right.
do we know anything about the process, the creation of the Urantia book?
We do. Let me get into that a little bit. I do have that video that Dr. Meredith Sprunger produced on the origin of the Urantia book, and I am looking at a 15-page paper, 1992 copyright second edition by Mark Kulicki, titled Birth of a Revelation, the Story of the Urantia Papers.
Mm-hmm.
And these are very interesting. And I've heard other people like Wendell Stevens, who, you know, he said he owns two copies of the Urantia book because the borders of his first copy weren't big enough to put all the notes he wanted to put in them. So he bought another book. And, you know, he
Is Wendell Stevens a lecturer on this subject?
Wendell was a truth seeker because of his association with the UFO subject while he was in the Air Force. While I was in the Air Force, I didn't get any official information about the alien presence. But I did meet six people who had seen UFOs up close and I knew wouldn't lie to me about it, and they told me their stories, but it was unofficial. Now, Wendell, he retired from the Air Force something like 12 years before I did. But while he was in the Air Force, he was working on UFO-related programs, which I thought was kind of interesting.
Well,
we lost a great researcher in the field when we lost Wendell last year.
He died last year?
Yeah, he did. At 86, I think.
Well, when I went back and was reviewing, because it had been quite a long time since I'd looked at the Urantia book, and probably like a lot of people, I got a bit lost in those early chapters, and was not in any sense counseled on the matter. There was no group
right.
that I talked to or anything else. I just simply read.
Well,
but I didn't realize until reviewing, I didn't remember how what a substantial portion in the latter part of the book is really very much about the life of Jesus Christ.
Right. Most people can relate to the life of Jesus Christ, so it's much easier to understand that. And the middle part of it is essentially the history of everything. And we can pretty well relate to at least the subject matter if we don't know the history.
Mm-hmm.
So what I tell people is to start at the beginning, because that's the way I was directed in my meditation for New Year's Resolution 1999, to take that book and move it from the bottom of my reading stack to the top and don't read any other book till I finish it cover to cover. That was my direction mm-hmm. in that meditation.
Mm-hmm.
And so I encourage people to read the book from the front cover to the back. And if you know, don't, if you don't understand much of that first 300 pages in section one, don't worry about it. Force your way through it, and you'll absorb enough to appreciate the rest of the book. Mm. Once you'll absorb enough to know from where Jesus came, because Jesus is a far greater personality than most any Christian minister could possibly imagine, in my opinion, unless he's read the Urantia book. It's an amazing thing. He is referred to in the Urantia book, the one who incarnated here is Jesus, as a creator son with the capability in conjunction with the Mother Spirit to create all life in a local universe. And his local universe has 10 million planets with intelligent life. And he chose this one, the only one. We are unique in our universe. We're the only one that has had a bestowal of the Creator's Son here as Jesus. And the reason he chose, according to the Rancher book, this planet over all the other planets. First, we were one of the 37 planets that rebelled in the Lucifer Rebellion. There were 606 planets in the local star system that had intelligent life. And when Lucifer and Satan rebelled, they were encouraging all the other planets to rebel along with them. You know, they each had what they call planetary princes. Ours was a guy named Caligastia who lived there between the Tigris and Euphrates. That was 200,000 years ago, so you don't see much about that in our archaeological history.
Does it give you any understanding of why they rebelled?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. What it says is that Lucifer made a declaration of independence. He declared that he would no longer report to the spiritual hierarchy above him at the constellation level and the local universe level, all the way up to the super universe level and paradise, that he would be sovereign of the star system. He was a real rebel, and he was fired. And it wasn't until 2,000 years ago when Michael, incarnated here as Jesus, encountered Lucifer, Satan, in the desert. For the 40 days in the desert, he encountered him there and had this mental battle, you might say, and locked him up, where he could no longer influence humans on this planet for the past 2,000 years. So in my world, which is taught in the Urantia book, people who say the devil made me do it, you know, in the last 2,000 years are based upon somebody else's view of what the devil was. But Lucifer and Satan were kind of, you know, they filled the position of the devil, so to speak. And they haven't been able to personally influence anybody on this planet for 2,000 years.
So it's a little bit like the comedy presentation of Flip Wilson, where the wife tells her husband that the devil made her do it, Geraldine. People who are utilizing that are really utilizing the devil as an excuse?
I guess so, but my personal way of looking at the devil, when somebody says the devil, I think of the selfishness that's in some human beings. That's how I view the devil, you know, right now.
But that's not a
big part of my life because.
Yeah. And Satan and Lucifer are not entities that have any control over us now.
That's absolutely true. In fact, the new teaching mission, which started in 1982, when Micah Vento Melchizedek, a teacher, a high school, or a high level professor type in the local universe, enlisted 11 other Melchizedeks to manage a teacher for anybody that asked for him. Any group, whether it's your rancher group or any other group that asks for a teacher, you know, if they get to the spiritual evolution level where they can go into a meditative state and send out a request and receive an answer, where they can, where they're teachable, where they're seeking. You know, Jesus, I think, said, "Ask and it shall be answered unto you." I think that's what's going on now with the new teaching mission. But at that time, or since then, we were told that through those teachings, they call it the new teaching mission associated with Urantia, but some people don't like to associate it with Urantia book. But we were told that
Lucifer and Satan both... And why would they not want to connect it with Urantia?
Because some people in the Urantia movement are leery of telepathic communications, I guess. I think that's got, you know, their ministers, before they got associated with the Urantia book, a lot of Christian ministers tell people that any information you get from unseen sources is probably from the devil, so don't have anything to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
They scare people. They teach fear and scare people not to seek their own truth. They teach people to take the Bible word for word and don't look for any other, you know, more advanced truth. Mm-hmm. My view is that many times higher intelligence has come here to teach truth to human beings, and it's the human beings that tend to turn that teaching into some kind of a religion. And that religion gets distorted over time, sometimes intentionally by government and religious leaders, sometimes through translations, but periodically you have to come back and give a less distorted version of the truth.
And there's been no attempt or there's been no development of a religious organization come out of the Urantia book that is, it's not had that kind of history at all, has it?
No, it you know, the only organized thing is they will have an annual conference. Every other year, I think the International Urantia Association has a conference. I'm going next week to Salt Lake City to that one. It's a 5-day conference. I've been to two of them before, and I've thoroughly enjoyed them. And there are, you know, the United States Urantia Association has an annual conference. I've enjoyed
that. Is there any reason that Salt Lake City was chosen?
Oh, they move it around different places. There was a group there that was felt that capable of putting on a big conference like that. It was a UCLA. Well, I think it was in Australia before that, and before that was in UCLA. I went to that one in UCLA. I didn't go to Australia.
We've had on this show Richard Floyd, who's a member of the High Council in Memphis of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, which is also headquartered in Salt Lake City.
Right,
quite a good interview where he talked a lot about the history of them. Do you see any or much connection between the Pearl of Great Price, the Book of Mormon, and the Urantia book?
Well, this is. Here's a thought. You know, I have read Joseph Smith Tells His Own Story. It's a little, you know, small booklet that I got from my aunt's library when she died a while back. And apparently the various Christian denominations in New England were so adamant about their way of looking at Christianity was the right way and everybody else's was wrong. And all these different Christian groups were arguing with each other about it, and Joseph Smith was getting fed up with it. Joseph Smith was open to change, and that's why he was chosen to try and get beyond that. And so, you know, he was given a new way of thinking. I look at it as kind of an updated Christianity, and I find it interesting that at that time they were taught to um, you know, to maintain a couple of years of provisions in the home for emergencies.
Mm-hmm.
And that may come in useful if we do have some earth traumas that you hear talked about associated with Planet X or Nibiru or whatever.
But the
other thing is there is all this empty space out west, and it's hard to get an equal number of men and women to go west, young man, go west.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why they were given permission to have multiple wives, so they can go out there and raise children with common thoughts and develop a society that wasn't, you know, like in New England where everybody was bickering with everybody else about how you ought to worship God. So that's just a thought. Now, you know, I've had some thoughts about Islam also, in that, in my studies of that, is because it was Gabriel. Gabriel, according to the Rancher book, is the first creation of Michael and his right-hand man, and essentially the chief executive of this universe we all live in. And Gabriel was the same guy, in my opinion, and what I've read from the Muslim faith also, that spoke to Mohammed in the cave, the illiterate fella, and gave this information. All 78,000 words of the Quran came through the mind of Mohammed. And it was looked at as the word of God because he was illiterate, and he was allowed to remember it long enough to speak it to the scribes and have the scribes write it down. You know, I've had one of those experiences myself. I woke up in 28 January 1992. I woke up 2 o'clock in the morning. I had a video screen in my mind with two sentences written on it. There was no room in my mind for any other thought till I got up and wrote down those two sentences. As soon as I wrote them down, my mind cleared. I could think about other things, go back to sleep, whatever. I think it was that same kind of mental control that Gabriel had over Muhammad that allowed him to write the Quran. And what happened was Christianity, 600 years after Christ was here, Christianity was spreading through the area, but the nomadic tribes of the desert, right in the middle of the area where Christianity was spreading, were not buying it. And they were becoming a real detractor. They were very, very barbaric, and they lived by the sword. And the only way to change, to bring those people together and stop interfering with, you know, the spread of Christianity around them, at that time, you know, 600 years after Christ, the only way was with the sword. Gabriel had decided that you can't bring these tribes of the desert together without the sword, because they were nomadic tribes that lived by the sword. And now, you know, Islam has tried to extrapolate that idea that was meant for the 5th century or 6th century or whatever it was to the modern day world, and it just doesn't work.
What about you mentioned that you'd read the Bhagavad Gita and I suppose other Vedic writings. Do you see a connection with those two?
I think it's the same universe that's being described, and the information is being given, designed for the culture, the time it's being given. One thing in your answer book I find very interesting, because you know I have friends who've written books about Jesus teaching in the East. And I'm convinced that since they didn't have cameras back then, 2,000 years ago, and since Jesus did not want his personal ministry to be talked about, you know, to be confused with his public ministry that started after his baptism, he kept his personal ministry secret, and his personal ministry was with the young son of an Indian businessman who was making a 2-year business trip around the Mediterranean, and he wanted someone who spoke all 3 languages of the Mediterranean as an interpreter and someone to be a teacher, a tutor for his young son. And Jesus filled both roles. And every time they'd have an experience which would cause the young son to ask questions, Jesus would talk about that. And so the lessons over those 2 years were actually, according to the Rancho book, designed to teach not just people on the earth, but people in the other 10 million planets of his universe. Because the circuits, the communication circuits were open for most of them, all but 36 of them, and where they had the circuits cut off as a result of the Lucifer Rebellion. So the teachings of Jesus here was not just for human beings. And that's why, according to the Rancho book, people on neighboring planets refer to our planet as the planet of the cross because of what we did to their spiritual leader. That's an interesting thought, isn't it?
Mm. These, all of those planets are obviously not they're not even in this galaxy, are they?
Well, galaxy is not a term that's used in the Urantia book, but if anybody is is really into astronomy, there is a Urantia astronomy website. I think it's .org, and it will show you where paradise is. I mean, they use Hubble telescope pictures now to show you the 7 super universes. You know, we're part of the 7th super universe, and it will show you a big empty spot, which our astronomers say is the center of all gravity. Everything rotates around this big blank spot you can see with the Hubble telescopes. Well,
yeah,
that's
that
where
is
paradise
described
is.
In great detail with the of Havana and the space that's in between.
Right.
And the worlds that are in that part. That's
yeah. Let me give your audience some websites.
Yes, and if there is any contact number that you don't mind getting emails to, or if anybody would like to ask you something, go ahead and give that to.
Yeah, anybody can write me at donware@embarkmail.com. That's donware at embarkmail.com.
That's embarkmail.com.
Yes, but. My favorite Urantia site is the UrantiaBook.org, UrantiaBook.org, UrantiaBook.org.
Uh-huh.
That's a great site. You can spend a lot of time in there. In fact, you know, you can read, you can download, you can read the Urantia book on any of these websites free. They don't charge for it. You can You can enlist in a class free, where you have a really good expert teacher on certain papers and study certain papers with them. The original one is Urantia.org, Urantia.org. That's the Urantia Fellowship. They're the ones that originally received the book and were given the direction not to allow that book to be distorted like the Bible was. Keep it exactly the way they got it. And the Urantia Fellowship they're more liberal with it. They have put an index in the book, for example. In fact, at one point they took out section 4 on the life of Jesus and published it independently. And a few things like that. But, you know, you can get that book for... They don't charge a whole lot for it from either one of these websites. And there's a website called You Be the News, and that's UBTHENEWS www.thefraternityofmen.com, and it's designed to show people science that is described in the Urantia book before it was discovered by our scientific community. It adds a great deal of credibility, particularly to those with the scientific mind. Mm-hmm. And that's some amazing stuff they do. They publish a number of different papers. And they just published a paper, I think it was about 134 pages, on eugenics, which is a subject that most people are afraid of ever since World War II, I guess. But you know,
the reason of genes.
Say again.
That's the manipulation of genes to create
the upgrading of humanity by genetic engineering.
Is
basically what it is. You know, that was one of the subjects, one of the roundtables that I attended at the last State of the World Forum in 2000, held there in conjunction with UN Millennium Summit. I was able to sit on roundtables on manipulation of the human genome, on getting more spirituality in the United Nations, and on democratizing world governance. Very interesting subjects.
I'm interested too, because of some of the teachings and things that are taking place in Memphis about the association of the Law of One books, the Ra books, and the Urantia book. Is you mentioned that there's nothing specifically different, but what was the idea of a separate revelation of the same thing, or are there many such things?
Well, the Urantia book is described as the fifth epical revelation, described in the Urantia book.
Mm-hmm.
And the information that Jesus taught to humans 2,000 years ago is the fourth epical revelation. And in fact, it says in the early on the Urantia website, they remind us that Jesus was speaking with his disciples on Mount Olive. When he was telling them about his second coming, he mentioned that prior to his second coming, there would be a new revelation. I think that's in the Bible. And the Urantia Foundation is convinced that this book is the new revelation that Jesus talked about with his disciples at Mount Olive.
So it wasn't the book of Revelation.
Huh?
So it was, the revelation was not the book of Revelation.
No.
In the Bible.
No. I don't think it was the book of Revelations. I think they're talking about... The Urantia Foundation is convinced that they were talking about the Urantia book. I mean, the book of Revelations is very interesting, and I've written a paper about it in relation to Planet X. Because you know, I think John... I've been to Patmos where John had that revelation. And I know the lady who has taken every sentence from the book of Revelation and gone back to her spirit guides and found out if that is accurate or if it was distorted. If it was distorted, who distorted it and why? You know, that book is published. It's called The Secret Revelation by a lady named Stella Rieger, I think her name is. She got the Lifetime Achievement Award. It took her 10 years to do that because that book...
Stella, what was her name?
Stella Rieger, R-I-G-O-R, wrote a book a few years ago called The Secret Revelation, which it gets a little repetitive in places, but it goes through the last
book. The book
of the
Revelation
Bible
itself is repetitive, so there'd be no way to, no way to interpret it without repetition.
She had two spirit guides that were answering her questions on each sentence of the last book of the Bible. And on two of those questions, they didn't have the answer. They had to go directly to John of Patmos to get those answers.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, I've written a book on that myself, so I'd be very interested in following up with The Secret Revelation by Stella Rieger.
Yeah, I think you'd find that very interesting. Anyway, the Rancher book says that the third epical revelation was what the Melchizedeks of Salem brought to this planet 3,000 to 4,000 years ago. Now, they were the teachers of Moses. And, you know, 2,000 years ago, the Essenes there at Qumran, their job was to make sure that those teachings from the third epical revelation, from Melchizedek, there in Salem or Jerusalem, we now call it, were not lost to humanity. And we didn't have printing presses, so they would be up there and they would, you know, write this stuff in, out longhand in various languages and send their couriers off to all these different faraway places to make sure that they had copies of the information of the third epical revelation. And the second epical revelation was what Adam and Eve brought to the planet, which this book says was 34,000 years ago. You know, the Bible is not good at giving us dates about things, actually. So so those teachings, some of those teachings have shown up in the Bible, in the Old Testament. But the first epical revelation was what was taught to the planet, to human beings, during the time Lucifer and Satan ran the star system headquarters.
Now, how does it talk at all about certain things that, for instance, Atlantis?
No, it does not talk about Atlantis. But if you want to know about Atlantis, I can give you a book title that will tell you all you need to know about Atlantis, probably. Because I have a friend who has been in telepathy. She's 78. She's been in telepathic communication with a descendant of the Atlanteans all her life. And she and her husband wrote 3 books.
What I was wondering is, where chronologically Atlantis came in these epochs?
Well, the Atlantia, it was a continent that was in the what we call the Atlantic Ocean now, and over several different periods of Earth's traumas, the islands went down. The last of the islands went down 10,500 years ago.
Okay, and so that would have been in the third epoch. Second or third epoch. That would have been before Moses.
Before Moses, right. Yeah. In fact, this fellow Dagon, that's been my friend Valerie Bonrick's teacher and telepathic friend, you know, they were from elsewhere. The Atlanteans had been on that continent for, I don't know, 40,000 to 50,000 years maybe. And they said that their spiritual teachers were, they referred to them as the Lords of Shambhala, is how they referred to their spiritual teachers. But they were from elsewhere. They weren't natives of planet Earth. The first humans were genetically upgraded on planet Earth, according to the Rancher book, upgraded from Homo erectus 994,000 years ago. And then
we've got about 90 seconds left on in the show time here, and I think we could probably talk for quite a bit longer, and if you will consent to do so, we'll see about you coming back and following this up with a little bit further explanations. But go back and give them your email address again. And
yeah, I'd love to do that. My email address is Don Ware, Donware, at embarkmail.com, embarkmail.com. And let me give you my web address. There are 15 of my papers I put there. It's freewebs.com/Don Ware.
Freewebs.com.
Freewebs.com, little free website. Freewebs.com/Don Ware.
Okay. And you've already given your email, regular email address. Don't forget that ubthenews.com if you want to check on some of the later things coming out on the Urantia book, and urantiabook.org.
Right.
And thank you very much, Don, for being with us on the show tonight. Thank you, Cecil, for the moderating, and thank you, folks, for being with us. We remember the show on Wednesday night at 7 o'clock. Keith Blanchard is our guest. Have a good evening, everybody. Thanks again,
Look forward to talking to you again.
Thank you.
Bye.